Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasures,
new
planetary mind controls,
military
cover-ups,
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasures, planetary mind
controls,
corporate
presidential
assassination,
Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
Interested in ghosts? UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
That might be why we can't see it.
The veil between this world and the next getting thinner? I'm Chris Sloan, inviting you to join in and listen to a new podcast that deals with the paranormal, Parapod, with new guests every week, from paranormal investigators to the people they help. Hear actual EVP. The people that capture.
We go into a case to disprove a haunting.
Three flashlights, actually four counting the lantern, were actually honed in on this thing, and it was swallowing the light up.
Parapod. Log on to myspace.com/ Chris Sloan Radio. That's myspace.com/ CHRISSLONE Radio. The only difference between the believer and the skeptic is time. And your time is now. You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
All children growing up in America learn who the founding fathers were. Most, however, never learn of the founders' connections to the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, and other esoteric orders. In Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, Robert Hieronymus investigates these important connections as well as the founders' connections to the League of the Iroquois and how the influence of these groups can be traced throughout our most significant national documents and symbols, especially the Great Seal. He reveals in detail how the reverse of the Great Seal, which appears on the back of the $1 bill, is a blueprint that conveys the secret destiny of America. In decoding the symbolic meaning of the Great Seal's reverse, we discover the unique opportunities our current era presents for achieving our Founding Father's spiritual vision. Robert Hieronymus, Ph.D., is a historian, visual artist, and radio host. His weekly program, 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus, broadcast new paradigm topics across the United States. He lives in Maryland. And with that, I almost nailed the bio, Doug. I almost got it perfect, didn't I?
I heard that you were so close.
With that, I would like to welcome Dr. Bob Hieronymus. His website is www.21stcenturyradio.com. Dr. Hieronymus, welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Well, Scott and Doug, thank you for getting in touch with me to talk about this. And as we all know, there's no such thing as ghosts.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
No, that's the way to go. That's the way to come out of the gate, I say.
All right.
You know, because if you saw any of the movies, remember the movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s? I mean, ghosts didn't stand a chance.
No,
they were always ridiculed. They were always put down as, that's not possible. Do you believe in ghosts? Yes. And they say, yes. And another person would say, well, that person can't get their act together. I mean, you know, do you remember the prejudices? I mean, enormous prejudices.
Well, God, I mean, as much as we like to cite, and we do it plenty of times on this show, we cite Scooby-Doo every once in a while, but Scooby-Doo, literally every single episode of Scooby-Doo, they pretty much revealed that everything was a hoax every single episode, right?
So well, everything is a hoax.
Nothing. Hey, all right.
Hey, listen, this last administration proved to us that there's no such things as hoaxes.
That's true. I have to agree.
Well, you know, the reason why I brought this thing up because, of course, I've always had some interest in ghosts. Even when I was an atheist, I thought there was such a thing as the possibility of something being left over after you die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the evidence now is so overwhelming. The documentation is so good. So many individuals whose research, what happens over a long period of time is that more and more credible researchers get involved and they prove certain things that other people didn't have the ability to do so. Now, we got the same kind of situation with the Great Seal of the United States and especially our founding fathers, because back there in, let's go back to about 1966. Can I go back that far? Is that
allowed? Sure, yeah.
Oh, good, okay. The reason why I would go back that far is that I was, being an artist, you're always poor, especially when you're younger.
Tell me about it.
And we didn't have such things as telephones, and we didn't have cars, and we didn't have this, and we didn't have that. We just had ourselves. Plus, When it got very hot, the best way to cool off, we learned, was sit in a cold tub of hot water.
Okay.
That was the best way to do it. But after you sit in there for 3 or 4 hours, it gets kind of weird. You get all wrinkled up and stuff. However, I was sitting in my hot tub, and it was about 112 degrees outside, and I was looking at my last $1 bill. Now, a dollar bill back in the mid-60s, you could buy stuff with a dollar bill. Now, I don't know. I don't know if you can get a cup of coffee anymore for a dollar. But
no.
In those days, you could get an awful lot. And any artist who wanted to live and eat at least one meal a day, you'd buy a loaf of bread for 20 cents, and you'd buy a half a pound of bologna, the lowest quality bologna you can get in your hands off, and a few other things like mayonnaise. And you could put yourselves together a number of these kind of sandwiches, bologna sandwiches, fried bologna sandwiches, then you can get some tomato, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I was looking at the last dollar bill I had, and I turned it over, and there was this pyramid in the eye in the triangle, and I thought to myself, what in the H? Notice I'm just saying H now. I'm not doing anything illegal, right? What the H is this about?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, being a good atheist, I thought to myself, look, all I got to do is contact my State Department, and they're going to tell me what this pyramid and eye in a triangle is all about, and then they're going to tell me all about these mottos, the Novus Ordo Seclorum and the And We Kept Us. I already knew what the Pluribus Unum meant, so I was only one-third there as far as the mottos goes. But it took about five and a half months, and I finally got an answer from the State Department. And I remember looking at that official letter to Bob Hieronymus, of the State Department, and it said basically this: here is the information you wanted on the Great Seal, and they showed me a beautiful full-color reproduction of the front of the Great Seal.
Okay.
And nothing else. Zero.
Really?
Zilch. And I thought to myself, they must have forgot. I mean, because that's not my question. I didn't ask them that question. I knew what.
Now, where is page 2? Page 2 is missing from my letter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, there was no page 2. So I did it again. I trusted my State Department like anybody else would back in those days, and I asked them again. And this time, they came through. They came through with a black and white photograph of the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States, and that was all. We still didn't get any information. I finally got the point that maybe they didn't know all about this symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were too embarrassed to know anything about it. And the truth is, back there in 1966, which is only some 40-some years ago,
they
did not have the best documentation on the history of the Great Seal, and that did not come out until 1978. 1978! Now, I wanted other information, so we didn't have an internet, but I always scoured all the old bookstores, and I got every little booklet, pamphlet, book I could on the Great Seal, and they told me their story. But the stories that they told me that I thought were accurate were wrong. I didn't know that because I didn't have the eagle and the shield of 1968. Then I realized that almost all of the research that had been going on from the 1930s, oh, even before that, up until about 1977, had to be inaccurate. And that was a major shock to me because I had already thought that certain individuals knew what it was all about. I love this story. And here's a basic story about the Great Seal that if you used esoteric sources back in the mid-60s, you would have heard this stuff.
Okay.
You would have heard 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. And I thought to myself, what? how could this be? Why isn't this all over books and history? I mean, that's an enormous amount of our founding fathers. Some even said 55 of the 56. That's almost 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And if that were true, then it's obvious that the founding fathers and secret societies were extremely important in getting together and doing something about those symbols, because those symbols, when you look at the pyramid, the Iron Triangle, you look at them and you say, this looks like some kind of a secret society, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, it does to me.
Yeah.
So I was I was euphoric then. I really was, because I got my hand on this. I got the answer now. It was secret societies that came in. The Freemasons designed it and everything. So a few years later on, when I found myself in 1968, I'm up in New York City, and I'm in a nightclub called the Scene. The Scene in New York City is where many of the rock groups would play, and my job at that time, I was going to be doing record album covers for musicians from Elektra Records. Now, Elektra Records had some pretty darn good musicians at that time period, so I was pretty excited, and they said, look, you know who you got to go see? You got to go see Jimi Hendrix. You got to see Jimi Hendrix at this place called The Scene, and we'll let him know you're coming, and he'll welcome you, and you can have a discussion. So, needless to say, I'm sitting there at this little table at a place that only the people, the very wealthy, can go, and all of the rock stars, Jeff Beck was there, the Jefferson Starship was there. They all jammed. This was the place that they hung out and jammed at for all night long. So I'm sitting there with Jimmy, and Jimmy and I are talking about cymbals. And I said, you know, I'm going to maybe do some record album covers and everything like that. And the reason why I like cymbals is because they can reveal things and they can conceal things. And he said, yeah, you're right. You're right. And, I said, especially look at this. And I said, this pyramid in the eye of a triangle. He said, yeah, I've been looking at that for some time. I'm not using my Jimi Hendrix accent here. But he said, yeah, I've been looking at that for a long time, and I want to know what it means. And I said, Jimmy, I'm going to lay it on you. I'm going to tell you what this means. Mm-hmm. So I gave him the information that I had learned from all these other esoteric sources, Manly Palmer Hall, Paul Foster Case, Corinne Helin, Theodore Helin, you name it. I mean, there were dozens of these little booklets and pamphlets. And we sat there and we smiled and we had a good time. So the second and third and other times I went to go meet with him, he and I started always talking about this pyramid, the Iona Triangle, what it meant to this country, and boy, their secret societies are really something. And now I owe Jimmy an apology.
Why is that?
Because I was wrong.
Uh-oh.
I was dead wrong. There weren't 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. Had I had Eagle and the Shield in my hands in 1966 and 67 and 68, I wouldn't have leapt to all of those conclusions. I assumed by looking at things, because they look like something doesn't mean they really are something. Sometimes they are what you think, but there's lots of times that they aren't. And anyone who does their research knows you better go to primary sources, best sources. That's the reason why you have peer-reviewed stuff. We don't have peer-reviewed stuff to keep you from publishing something, but you need peer review to check your facts out. If you don't check your facts, you can make the same stupid mistakes that I made. So it's a true confession, and I'm sorry I made those mistakes, Jimmy, but I know he forgave me. I was just with talking yesterday with the last member of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Billy Cox, and we were talking about this time period, because I thought to myself, all the time, little time I spent with him, I didn't really know him. He wasn't my friend. I would love him as my friend. We were just acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
So then I began to find out all kinds of other stuff that I was wrong in, mainly because I didn't use good source material, and that's the reason why I said to myself, I'm going to get this right. I am going to get my Ph.D., and my Ph.D. is going to be in this area, and I'm going to finally get to the bottom of this. So it took 5.5 years, and I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars to get a Ph.D. that, you know, is not going to increase your income by more than 20 cents a week, you know. You don't get Ph.D.s for that. They just cost you an awful long time. Now, so when I decided to republish my work, it first came out in 89, and then I corrected all my mistakes, and then, of course, then all this other literature has been coming out, because it took historians a long time to even consider that secret societies had any influence on our founding fathers, which is pretty stupid. It is, you know, they looked at Benjamin Franklin in his Masonic garb, and they looked at George Washington, and I would say to them, hey, look, you know, they're not hiding this. They're right out in the open here. What do you think the importance of the secret societies were? And every historian from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s said the same thing. Bob, you're wasting your time. The secret societies had no real influence on the founding fathers. They were dead wrong. They did, because there's a whole other hidden aspect to every one of these symbols. That's enormously important, but it's not as simple as most people, like myself, good old simple Bob, thinking, oh, man, in my bathtub, I got the story here. And unfortunately, I misinformed a lot of people. So I owe Tim Buckley, Janis Joplin, some of the Doors, et cetera, all those guys I owe apologies to. And I have apologized to some of them. So I don't feel so bad about that.
Well, Dr. Hieronymus, that takes a lot to say, though. I mean, you know, Doug, and you could probably cooperate with me on this. I mean, there's been times even here on our show where we've reported something maybe, or we've had someone on or something like that, where we find out later down the road that maybe these weren't exactly the facts. We weren't, you know, it wasn't 100%, you know, and there's been times where we've come on and said, you know, look, this is, we'll take the hit for this one. And, you know, this is what's up. And it's nice to hear that from someone like, look, you know, I revised my work and I made a mistake and I'm sorry about misinforming you. It's kind of refreshing to hear that, Dr. Hieronymus.
Well, I think, Any good scholar that wants the truth is embarrassed. You know what karma is,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh,
I'm not trying to inform you on anything you don't know. And you know, we all, when we pass on to the other side, we got a lot on me, especially a lot of karma to handle and work out. So the next time I come back in another improved edition, I hope, just like Benjamin Franklin said, when he comes back, he wants to be in an improved, better approved condition. I will be able not to make those kind of mistakes. I will be not... Now, look, artists learn to shoot from the hip when they work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're drawing, if you're painting, if you're singing, if you're creating, anything you do, if you're in a creative mood, you do not want to sit around and rationalize it. You want it, just like Paul McCartney would say, hey, look, or Bob Dylan, I didn't write that song. It just came through me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I wrote it, because people say, hey, Bob, how did you write this stuff? Goes, I don't know. I don't know. It just came through me, and I wrote it, and he doesn't necessarily expect anyone to believe it, but many artists in those areas are used to that. But you can't use that kind of intuition, because intuition can be an error. You may have biases and prejudices like I had, because I was heavily into symbols. I knew what certain symbols meant, and when you look at the pyramid, the eye, and the triangle, anyone that can look at that and say this is not a mysterious symbol, I don't know, they must be on another planet, because it's the most mysterious symbol I ever saw, and I could never figure out how in the world did America pick up such a symbol.
Mm.
And it wasn't exactly, of course, the kind of thing that fundamentalists, especially, they love this topic. Fundamentalists love this because they think they know what this great seal is all about. They've figured it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Their figuring comes down to this, that there were secret societies, the founding fathers, remember, these are secret societies, and they decided to hide what they were doing in the symbols of the great seal of the United States. And because the reason why they were hiding them is because it was their desire to take over the world. I mean, not just America.
But the world.
I mean, you know, that was eventually what most of the fundamentalists believe when they take a look at this kind of symbol. And when, if you say to them, hey, can I see your bibliography?
Mm-hmm.
Fat chance. What? What do you mean, bibliography? I got this off the Internet. Oh?
Oh,
you think the Internet is the most accurate thing in the world? Why, of course. It wouldn't be up there on the Internet if it weren't true. Come on. I mean, you know, but it's true. I have sitting in front of me 7 books, and the reason why I have these 7 books in front of me, they were all written by fundamentalists on the Great Seal of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being interviewed to do another documentary this coming Friday with folks from Hollywood, because we've done Discovery, National Geographic, History Channel, others repeatedly in Canada, Germany, elsewhere, all over the planet. And so I wanted to prove to these guys that all of these sources say the same thing. Now, if you read, say, for instance, something from a book called Illuminati 666 or The World Order or the New World Order or The Dark Secrets of the New Age and Cosmic Conspiracy, every one, all 7, I didn't mention all 7, but all 7 of them, do not have a bibliography, and most of them don't even have an index. If you want to check on something, you can't. However, one of them did have a bibliography. It was not put in your traditional bibliography form of, you know, A, B, C, D, but in numbers. The guy just lists 85 books. I mean, that's pretty impressive to those people who know nothing about research. I look at my research, but if you look at the books, most every one of them were as an encyclopedia or some type of a dictionary. Now, I and you know, when we were in college, exactly how to write a paper.
Oh, yeah.
Paper fast. You know, you collect those things. That you can't do it so well now because the Internet, everyone's savvy. The teachers are savvy. They know. They know where you're getting your stuff.
You're right, when I was in college, I mean, doing a bibliography, it was a very intensive process. There were methods to it. There was different types of bibliography. I mean, there was lots of different ways to do it, and it was something you needed to have when you were writing a paper or, you know, a thesis or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Now it is a bit different, unfortunately, but I remember a time not too long ago where you actually had to cite every little thing you did, and that's what I still think people should do, unfortunately.
Of course.
It doesn't happen like that now, and like you just said with the Internet, it's very simple, just to, you know, gank.
And so therefore, thank you for allowing me to go through this important process. Usually, when I do a show, they won't allow me to go into this kind of detail.
No.
And Scott and Doug, I do appreciate it because, you see, if you want to know the truth of something, it isn't always going to be necessarily what you want to believe. And if you start doing your research on shaky ground, it's going to stay shaky all the way through. And that's what I think anyone who goes after their BA or their BS or, well, there's BS, there's a lot of ways to translate that, right? But the same thing, you have the same thing with going to your master's or your PhD or even beyond that. They all know the same thing. It's the quality of your sources, and if they're primary sources, then you have credibility. Not because you can quote them, but because you know what is correct because you've examined all the material.
Yeah.
But you cannot examine any of these seven books here and find out where they got their information because they quote each other.
Well,
they don't quote a single source. They quote each other. So when one person says, yep, no doubt about it, it's not only that we had 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence that were Freemasons, therefore Freemasons running the country, but also they say things like, well, you take that pyramid and the eye and the triangle, well, that's satanic. That's satanic because everyone knows that the eye, a single eye, is Satan. It's not God. They didn't read Patterson and Dougal because the guys had put the seal together. These were scholars. They knew what they were talking about, and they knew about symbols because those who were scholarly were fortunate. Most people weren't. That's the reason why symbols during the founding of this country were so important. Mm-hmm. Most people were illiterate. They couldn't read, but they saw these symbols, and they were actually encyclopedias of symbols that researchers and scholars would use in the 16th, 17th, and 18th century. Now, we don't use those kind of things anymore, so unless you've really done your homework in those areas, you don't even know they exist. That's where many of our founding fathers decided when they put together the Great Seal of the United States that they went to these fonts of wisdom so that they could communicate with the people out there. So if you took somebody who lived in Philadelphia who really couldn't read or write but saw the symbol of the pyramid, they knew what that meant.
Yeah.
To them, it meant a symbol of eternity, something that will last forever, something that will not fall apart, like the Great Pyramid. They look at that and say, wow, how did they do this? We still don't know how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
We think we know sometimes, but we really don't know how they did it or what they were doing.
No, we don't. And that's one of my little pet hobbies is the Great Pyramid. And, yeah, you're 100% on that. There's lots of great theories out there to make your brain work, but nobody knows for sure. But gosh darn, the thing's still standing there, and it hasn't moved a muscle in God knows how long. So, yeah, it is something, in my opinion, you're right. It could represent eternity as far as forever, as you're talking.
Yeah, but that's how the those who were Americans at that time, you know, this was a very unpopular war, this Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
You had one-third for it, one-third plus against it, and the other, what was left, well, didn't they were undecided. They didn't know, but they didn't necessarily want to go to war. You know, it was a very unpopular war. Mm-hmm. So what our founding fathers like Thomas Paine and Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson, and what they had to do was they had to use symbols to communicate with these individuals. And when they saw the pyramid and they said, look, our country is going to last forever. This is a nation that is going to establish itself, that's not going to disappear, and we've got something important to do, and what we have to do has to deal with that eye in a triangle above the pyramid. They knew what eyes in a triangle meant. They knew what eyes, single eyes, meant. They knew what triangles meant. They knew what pyramids meant. And to them, they looked at that and said, wow, you know, our founding fathers are, you know, they really know what they're talking about. And they did. These were brilliant souls. And yes, indeed, when you take a look at them, if you get too close to any of your heroes, you're not going to be happy. If you get close to Bob Dylan, you're not going to be happy at all. You know, you don't want to know. With most of them, you don't want to know because they're, you know, they're making a living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's Bob Dylan up there. He's paying alimony out there to five or six ladies. He's got to work. He's got to work every day, every night of his life to make sure he meets his payments. Now, to most people, they don't know that. But if you read Dylan's life and the sources and everything, and you realize that to him, he had a lot of women he had children with,
yeah.
And he was responsible. He didn't run away from it. He didn't say, nope, not me. I had nothing to do with that. He decided, well, I'm gonna have to pay.
Mm.
So a lot of the fundamentalists would say, what a rotten SOB. and I would say, well, that wasn't the best, the smartest thing he could have ever done.
But you're taking responsibility
for
it.
But he took responsibility.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what the whole thing about intention. Intention is the key to everything. He didn't intend to do those things, but he still, when he realized he made this, he was going to have to take care. And a lot of other rock and rollers, you know, in the same kind of a bag.
Yeah.
But I've always loved his work, but when you read about him and you know about him, you don't want to get too close. You don't want to get close to your heroes, you know, because we put them on these pedestals, which are impossible.
Yeah.
You take a look at Benjamin Franklin. Let's go to, excuse me just a second. I had to clear my throat.
No, no problem.
But, you take a look at my favorite founding father was Thomas Jefferson. Now, Thomas Jefferson, the fundamentalists hate him. I mean, they despise him. They don't just hate him. They despise him. They think he's satanic. They think that his ideas were all about control of the world, all this other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why? Why did they have this opinion? Well, they found out that of course, Thomas Jefferson, when he was married, when his wife passed on, she made him promise not to marry again. Now, you take any 30-some-year-old guy and you say to them, well, if I die, I don't want you to get married.
Mm,
I want
yeah.
you, you know, very difficult to do.
Very
what did he do? He promised her he wouldn't get married, but he didn't promise her he wasn't going to have sex, you know? And so, therefore, when Thomas Jefferson fell in love with a slave lady.
Yes, we've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. And he had children by the slave lady, then he had to keep that as quiet as possible. And of course the fundamentalists say, look at this, this is pathetic. This guy, I mean, it was almost like Bill Clinton all over again, you know. Let's focus on penises here, friends, you know. And in actuality, you know, there are certain things that human beings need. There are needs, and to ignore those needs, like many fundamentalists would do, will certainly change you considerably internally.
Mm-hmm.
It will cause problems for you that come out later on as minister ends up hatcheting 15 women because they were prostitutes or something like that. Now, you think I'm exaggerating there, but if you look at news stories, you will find that it happens.
Well, you're hearing about that all the time, you know, with the clergy especially. I mean, as we know, a few years ago, there was that huge, you know, outbreak with the Catholic Church and the, you know, and the young boys and stuff like that. I'm sure you know all about that. And that was a huge thing, and it's still being debated about, you know, today. Like, why would this happen? Well, you know, like you just said a few seconds ago, I mean, there are basic needs that a human needs or a person needs, and when they're denied those things, yeah, it changes your chemistry, it changes your mind, I think, a bit. It makes you, it may make you do irrational things, unfortunately.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, because you're unhappy.
Yeah.
And you take this unhappiness, you want to take it to your grave without doing anything about it? I mean, so founding fathers, you know, were not angels by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But Thomas Jefferson, you know, most people, the fundamentalists will never talk about this. You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And his Bible was all about what Jesus said. He didn't want to hear what everybody else's commentary. He didn't want to hear everybody else's interpretation. He wanted the words of Jesus. And when and as he said, you know, when you look at the words of Jesus, they stand out in the Bible as much as a diamond does in a dunghill. I mean, Jesus' words were about compassion. They were about love and compassion, and of course, most importantly, service to others, caring for others. That's the Jesus that I affiliate with, and that's that. As far as I'm concerned, he's not a punisher. He is not a guy running around with a machine gun like some of these fundamentalists believe. He's going to be coming back, and when he comes back, there's going to be a lot of hell to pay. Well, you know, I doubt very much if that has anything at all to do with Brother Tom. But you know, they hate this man so much that they literally have pushed this to the hilt to destroy his reputation. And this is not the first time it happened. Historically, when you look back, up to 1798 to 1799 to 1800, we almost lost a republic. We were being opposed literally by the clergy up there in Boston who sold everyone a bad bill of goods about the Illuminati, and many of the people believed it, even though at that time it was just totally disproven. That group was called the Federalists, and the Federalists wanted a king. It was them that wanted George Washington to be king. Now, why most historians don't literally point out who it was, I don't know. Maybe the clergy or don't want to hear this kind of stuff, but the truth is that they were determined to eliminate Thomas Jefferson, and push forward the idea that we need to have church and state together.
Mm-hmm.
We need a king, because mankind cannot govern himself without God and without a king. He's in deep doo-doo. And they literally, when they lost the election in 1800, that was their doom. Literally, the Federalists then eventually just... But you still have groups of individuals today that say these same kinds of things, which literally are all about, when you take a look at the pyramid, the iron, the triangle, now I'm giving you some of the history of it. Let me, if you don't mind, get to some of the meaning of it.
Sure, okay? Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, the key thing is that this is one of the most important symbols. Anyone who studied the work of Carl Jung or Abraham Maslow or Rollo May or Joseph Campbell knows about the importance of archetypes and symbols. And what we have on the back of a $1 bill literally are two symbols of extreme importance. Now, I'll give you the interpretations of the guys that created the seal, because they're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Thomas Jefferson. It wasn't Benjamin Franklin. It wasn't John Adams. They've sat on the very first committee, but none of their ideas, none of them, were used. Jefferson and Franklin went to the Bible. They actually went to the Bible and pulled out passages in the Bible and symbols in the Bible. And it was John Adams who actually went to Greek mythology, of all things. That's certainly satanic. Everyone knows that.
No, absolutely.
Oh, you know. But all their ideas didn't make any difference, because all their ideas were eliminated. Uh-huh. And it was two individuals by the name of William Barton and Charles Thompson. Charles Thompson was a Latin scholar. Charles Thompson was known by the Delaware tribe as the man who tells the truth. How many Native Americans from that time period would ever talk that way about a Caucasian white man? Hardly any.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Thompson was just one of those individuals. He was Secretary of Congress for like 18, 20 years, and he really knew what he was talking about when he gave us those Latin mottos. But back to that pyramid. That pyramid, as I mentioned earlier, can be looked at as many things. Yes, it could have been a tomb, but probably not. It could have been a temple, probably so. It could have been used for initiation. There are other theories now that it can be used for some kind of power system. All of those should be on the table. We should be able to examine all of those. But, of course, the story, historians are not going to do that. They're going to tell you it can only be a place to bury guys, even though we've never found somebody there, right?
Yeah.
We never found anyone in the Great Pyramid.
No.
And it was never stated that anyone was in it from that standpoint.
Mm.
So that pyramid literally was strength and duration. That is what William Barton, who put that pyramid on the Great Seal, he said the pyramid is strength and duration, strength being, of obviously, the power to last forever, duration. And that literally was his meaning for that. But when he got to the eye and the triangle, they came right up, stepped up to the plate and said, look, this eye and the triangle, this is the supreme being. This eye in the triangle represents the deity. What we got here, then, is a symbol for the physical world, the pyramid.
Yes.
And the eye in a triangle, spirit. This is one H of a statement.
Mm.
It's a statement about who every human being is. All of us have an immortal component within it, a component that goes on forever, that endures, and that is our soul or spirit. Now, whatever religion you are, I think most of the great religions say you got this. But when you get to other aspects of reincarnation, that's another story.
Yeah.
And most fundamentalists are going to throw that out the window because they only want one shot at it. You only get one shot, and if you don't get it right, you go to hell. I mean, I don't think that's not a very fair way of doing stuff. You know, you got to practice and make perfect somewhere, right? Do you do that?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to ask you one thing, though, too, about this symbol. Obviously, you're saying that the pyramid itself, it represents physical, you know, and forever, right?
Right.
And then there is the eye, and the triangle with the eye. And there, and as you notice, and I've heard all types of of theories concerning these symbols, but I'm wondering if this applies, though, too. The eye, obviously, in the triangle is above the pyramid. It's on top of the pyramid, which would, in my opinion, it seems like that would represent the supreme deity, you know, above us, looking down on us. Does that make sense to you, or does it?
Yes. No, that makes perfect sense. And the pyramid then is mom, mother.
Okay.
It's the breast. It's the breast. It's the mountain.
Okay.
When you go back into the work of Carl Jung and symbolism, and you start studying this stuff, and that's why it took me 5.5 years.
Mm.
He's not easy to.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But the final outcome is that what we got is a human beings are masculine and they are feminine. That is, each and every human being is masculine and feminine. And that when you look at it genetically, I might be, 51% masculine, 49% feminine. And it can be just the reverse for other females that are in female bodies.
Mm.
But we're learning to balance this, because just as if strength and duration is forever, matter is not destroyed.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Matter is not destroyed. It changes. It evolves.
Mm-hmm.
However, the eye in the triangle lives forever. But it also evolves. It doesn't stay the same. Our understanding of the supreme deity always is altered. So what you have here is a real complex symbolism with multi-level of meanings. It basically says, hey, look, we are all, this country is part physical, it's part spiritual. What we need to do is bring these two things together. That eye in a triangle completes us. It completes our nation. It completes our bodies, our spirit and soul, and bringing them together. So from that perspective, that's why the important thing is those mottos. Those mottos have to be really important, and we kept us. What does that mean? It's been interpreted by the fundamentalists all kinds of crazy ways. Basically, its real meaning is God prospers our undertaking. The deity looks with favor upon this process of founding a republic. Now, we've had republics before in Greece and Rome. Didn't last long.
Nope.
Certainly weren't much like ours, but they laid the foundation, and that's the reason why the founding fathers, they said, hey, what kind of symbols are we going to use? Well, we're going to use symbols when we build Washington, D.C., of Greece and Rome, because they represent literally this aspect of what you refer to as higher consciousness in regards to the element of bringing things together, so that, you know, there's so much more in this that deals with what's called the Age of Enlightenment, which is what the founding fathers were all about. They were trying to become enlightened beings. And as we said before, that yes, indeed, they made mistakes. But that "and we kept us" tells us that God favors this process beneath. He favors the founding of this republic. And when you look at the Novus Ordo Seclorum, my gosh, there was a Latin scholar that put these up there, and that was Charles Thompson, Man Who Tells the Truth, brilliant man, and he translated it as the New Order of the Ages. Now, what's the New Order of the Ages? New Order of the Ages is a republic, a representative form of government. Now, the fundamentalists, when they look at this, they read into it, but the worst possible interpretation of Latin I've ever seen, the New World Order. Anyone who studies Latin can't agree with that.
That several times. I mean, that's what I've been told over and over again. That's what that means, the New World Order.
And I can tell you this, that even though I did not necessarily vote for Ford, Reagan, and Bush, I know this about Ford and Reagan, especially Reagan. The Reagan, when we were working on something with the White House, Reagan said, hey, yeah, that Novus Ordo Seclorum, that's the New Order of the Ages. It's not the New World Order. It's the New Order of the Ages. So even though we had a president who was sleeping on the job most of the time, he at least knew this aspect of it. I don't think the fundamentalists liked that very much, by the way, his literally correcting that aspect of it, and it was first George Bush that made the mistake of calling it the New World Order, and other historians called him on that, so he doesn't say that.
No, he don't.
He backed off on that.
How many times I've heard that, I've seen that sample, or I mean, I've seen that, you know, played over and over again, I imagine it would be something he would not want to say again. Millions of times.
Yeah, and I think he just got bad advice from many of his speechwriters from that standpoint, But so you take a look at this pyramid, the eye, and the triangle, and you see that it is the story about spirit and matter. In other words, every nation is like a human being. It has a destiny. It has a purpose. And it is born, and many nations, of course, die.
Mm-hmm.
But this process that we see on the back of the Great Seal of the United States is a story literally about how can you create something that will last forever. Well, you do it with God favoring its undertaking, and you also pay attention to it from the physical standpoint and realizing that when you create a monument such as a pyramid, everything has to be perfected as you're putting it together. And we still don't know that perfect formula because we can't do one. If we were told, and I know that most of your listeners will probably say, that's crazy, I don't think we could recreate the Great Pyramid that we had in Giza. I don't think we could do it because I do not think they used the kind of technology that we think they used. That's as much as I want to say about that area.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a whole different show in itself, I think.
Yeah, and even those who used to think that. A good friend of mine, whom I've interviewed a number of times, he's such a good friend of mine that I've forgotten his name at this time. How do you like that? But anyway, he was Robert Schock, Dr. Robert
Schock. Oh, are you kidding me? That's a good friend of yours?
Yeah, he's a good man. Good man.
How small of a world is, I mean, we just had him on our show here not too long ago, just a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact.
Well, then you win all the prizes in the world. This is a man who, when he saw the situation, as you know, developed with the Sphinx.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he said, hey, what is this erosion? He went to a geologist, of course, and said, hey, check this out. How long would it take this to erode like this? And of course, needless to say, the geologist said, it's going to take you 5, 10, even longer, maybe 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And of course, those who had already knew everything about the Sphinx knew that was impossible.
Yes. Absolutely.
But all geologists agreed with him. They said, yeah. And this is a geological thing. This is not just historical. It's something you can examine that's physical, that we have a science of. And basically, that's really got the archaeologists up, and they hated this.
Oh, we had John Anthony West. I need to be corrected, too. John Anthony West was on the show a couple weeks ago. We had Dr. Schock on a couple months ago, but we've had him on several times, though. And they both worked together on that redating of the Sphinx.
They are great men. Great man. I remember that in 1992 when we broke the story for the very first time, because other people wouldn't handle that story concerning the Sphinx. You know, it was really just thrilling to know, because I've known John Anthony West for longer than Dr. Schock, and West has been so far ahead of the curve all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. And for good reason, because he knows about Schwaller de Lubitsch. He didn't reject that work, you know, like most other Egyptian Egyptologists did. And besides, I don't think most Egyptologists could understand what Schwaller de Lubitsch and all these other guys were talking about. They rejected it out of hand, the same way as when I tried to talk to historians back in the 60s and 70s, and I said, you know, there's something missing here about our founding fathers. I think it has something to do with symbols and consciousness. And secret societies, and they said, well, you know, you're just an artist. What the hell do you know? how are you gonna prove something like that? And I said, well, someday, I'm going to look into it. And it took me until 1976 when I finally got fed up with hearing the stupid excuses that why these historians wouldn't look. That's the reason why I said, I've got better get my PhD. Then they'll listen to me. But they still didn't listen to me until Dan Brown.
yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, it takes something like that for us all to start thinking about it. Unfortunately, just like the movie Titanic came out. I mean, that's something that happened well over 100 years ago. And you know, the movie Titanic came out. Oh my God! That's the history. And you know, it's the same thing. So unfortunately, yeah, these interesting things, they usually don't surface until someone makes a big blockbuster movie out of them, or you know, best-selling book. Unfortunately, but I tell you what, though, Dr. Ramos, I have to thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been so enlightening, because I have to be honest. I mean, I've really been interested in this. Doug knows I've been very interested in this subject of these symbols and these secret symbols.
And we've talked about this.
We've talked about this.
You and I have sat there and talked about it privately, you know, amongst ourselves, about the symbology in use, especially back in the late 1700s, was so much more meaningful than today.
Yeah.
And so we talked about that. We've talked about, of course, the conspiracy theories and all that stuff. But
yeah,
you know, what I've gotten out of this, Dr. Hieronymus, is that it's a beautiful symbol.
It is beautiful.
Yeah,
and that's what I've been thinking the whole time, Dr. Ramos, as you're explaining this. It's like, this thing represents forever. This represents that we will never fall. And that, it makes you kind of like, you know, want to put your hand over your heart for a second and just go,
well,
you know, this is what it's all about. And that's just a wonderful feeling, actually.
I agree. And that's the reason also why we did the book, United Symbols of America. By the way, if you go up to unitedsymbolsofamerica.com, on our website, you will find, you know, my book was originally 700 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So we lost 350. And that was terrible. That felt bad. A lot of our information, new stuff, brand new stuff, many more images, symbols, and things. That's why we put it up on UnitedSymbolsOfAmerica.com so that you could, or for free, so that people could obviously check it out for themselves, because I don't feel like, you know, I'm a lot like you. I don't like to coerce people into thinking things. Reason, I mean, is the kind of thing that our founding fathers would say, look, okay, you can be right, you can be wrong, but you got to be give us a method by which we can try to determine how we come to our conclusions of right and wrong. Give me your references. Give me your bibliography. Sounds like some church thing here, but it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
You can tell. All I need to do is go to someone's bibliography, and they don't have Patterson and Dougal in there. They don't know what they're talking about. They
well,
don't.
It's obvious you know what you're talking about with this. And the book, again, it's Founding Fathers, Secret Societies. You can get it on Amazon. I'm actually looking at Amazon right now as we speak, and I'm sure you can get it all over the place. And, I mean, just judging by this discussion alone, this is another book I'm going to have to get very, very soon and sit down with this. Because, I mean, again, I find this subject so interesting, and I've found myself staring at the dollar bill for, you know, just several minutes, just wondering. And again, the ideas that what's been presented here tonight is just, it's a powerful feeling, and it really makes me feel like, you know, I live in a place where, you know, we will never fall. No matter how rough things are with the economy and stuff right now, it makes me feel, you know, that we still live in a place where we're free to express ourselves like we're doing here tonight on the show.
And the most important thing, though, I believe, is this. The United States of America and those who founded it did want this nation to last forever, but they also meant something else, which was we are America. We are the seed of one of the most important philosophical aspects that I've ever come across, and that is we are one people on one planet. And from that philosophical perspective, why in the hell do we go to war?
Oh, God.
We are fighting we're fighting our own families. In that, yes, I know how naive that sounds, but that philosophy, America, has literally planted the seed so that other nations can become republics. And that doesn't mean they're going to have an easy time doing it. It doesn't mean they're going to be as successful as they're. But somewhere down in the future, somewhere out there, maybe 500, maybe 1,000, maybe 1,500 years, because this planet's not going to end. We're going to have really rough times of it, that's for sure, but it's not going to end. And that means, literally, when you understand that, that there's every possibility that eventually we will all be able to live together. We don't have to have the same government. That's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We just have regard for each other as human beings, and that's what I think. Fundamentalists aren't going to like this either. That's what I think Jesus Christ was all about.
And I think we should end on that, because that's a beautiful thought and a beautiful idea. Doug, what you think, that's a good idea too?
Absolutely. I had an absolutely jaw-opening hour.
Yeah, this is just,
listening to this and enjoy and staring at the back of a dollar bill.
Yeah, I've been doing that too, Dr. Anonymous. I've been looking at the computer at the dollar bill.
I wonder how many people listening to the podcast have a dollar bill in their hand right now.
Yeah.
but thank you so much, Dr. Hieronymus.
Well,
you
forgot one important thing. If you guys weren't doing this show, and if you guys were the kind of folks that had to flex your egos all the time, you might not have let me say any of that.
That's not who we are.
I know that's not who you are, but there are many shows like that. My Way or the Highway.